Just before you start listening to this podcast, a reminder that we have a special subscription offer. You can get 12 issues of The Spectator for £12, as well as a £20 Amazon voucher. Go to spectator.co.uk/voucher if you'd like to get this offer.
Hello and welcome to Coffee House Shots, The Spectator's daily politics podcast. I'm Cindy Yu and I'm joined by James Forsyth and Katie Balls. So today the government is announcing a new immigration policy, an expedited and cheaper visa for NHS staff from across the world. James, can you tell us about it?
So this is essentially a plan to fast track doctors and nurses who want to come and work in the NHS, fast track their visa applications. And I think what the political message the Tories are trying to get across here is we're pro-immigration, but pro-immigration that benefits the UK. They want to do a contrast with Labour, who they say are in favour of quote-unquote unlimited immigration. They want to say, look, Labour are in favour of free movement that allows anyone to come here, regardless of anyone from the EU to come to this country, regardless of whether they've got a job or not. We're in favour of immigration that benefits the UK. And I think their view essentially is this, is that there is virtually no public opposition to the idea of people coming to this country to work as doctors and nurses in the NHS. There obviously is public opposition to free movement. That's one of the main reasons why Leave won the referendum in 2016. And so they're trying to draw a contrast between them and Labour on immigration. And I think it's also a position where Boris Johnson is fairly liberal on immigration. I mean, this is a position that he is comfortable with. And I thought it was very striking that at the Tory election launch the other night, Priti Patel went after Labour hard on immigration. I think you are going to see a lot of this. We are for controlled immigration that benefits the UK. Labour are for, quote unquote, unlimited immigration.
Katie, this is part of the government's push towards a model that's closer to the Australian style point system. It sounds like jargon, really. What is the Australian style point system? Is it stricter on immigration or is it looser?
So I think there's some debate over what it actually means in terms of the overall amount and level of immigration you have. But the idea is that you specify about, skilled labour that comes into the country. So rather than freedom of movement, which means anyone can come in, you can adjust it and bend it to what the economy and the country needs on specific sectors. Mm. And this is just the start of it. We've previously heard Boris Johnson talk about making it easier for scientists to come to the country in a post-Brexit Britain. So I think you can start to see how the Tories plan to change the narrative on immigration to something where immigration does still happen, but they make it into a positive conversation by saying we need these sectors. As James touched on there, Boris Johnson is broadly someone who is pro-immigration. But lots of Brexit voters are pro-immigration, but it's also the case, I think, that there are many Brexit voters who think that freedom of movement has to end and immigration has to significantly come down. And therefore, I think that trying to talk about controlled immigration is one way to put this, this line between themselves and Labour. It's interesting hearing Victoria Atkins talking about this morning on the Today programme, very keen again to say, well, Labour has uncontrolled freedom of movement as their policy. But in doing that, you kept coming back to this point, which is, but with your current plan, with this idea of having, an NHS visa, a point star system, does this government expect immigration to go up or down? Now, she didn't answer that. She isn't the Home Secretary. She is a minister in the Home Office. But I think that is something you're going to keep being thrown back at them. And actually, you don't know. And I don't think Boris Johnson wants to necessarily tie his hands on this issue because, again, he is someone who thinks immigration can be a good thing. But I think that you can talk about controlled immigration and the brightest and the best as ways to sell it. I ultimately think if you're going to keep criticising Labour for freedom of movement, though, you are going to be pressed on whether you expect this to reduce overall immigration.
I think polling, though, suggests that the public have a kind of much more sophisticated view of this issue than the kind of political framing of it sometimes suggests. I mean, the Tories in this election can say, look, we're not going to treat this as a numbers game. We're interested in immigration that benefits the economy, that is going to boost the country's, boost living standards, support public services, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. I think that is actually a kind of credible message. And I mean, I think that the problem, the tens of thousands target that Theresa May had, it was never met and it caused, it caused more problems. I don't mean the up or down question. I think the government's obfuscation on that point, as Kate said, is a problem for it. But I think actually they should just say, no, we're not playing a numbers game here. We are interested in We are pro-immigration that benefits the UK economically and culturally. We are, you know, that is what the policy is going to be about promoting.
And Katie, the other big announcement from yesterday is that both major parties have set out their fiscal spending pledges. Tell us about that, because it's so complicated, I didn't quite understand.
So I think it was a day of the big spenders, no matter which chancellor or shadow chancellor you were listening to. You had John McDonnell pledging a lot of money, and I think that was around $55 billion in terms of extra spending per year. And then you had Sajid Javid going for a more modest number in an extra $22 billion a
year. Very modest.
But ultimately, if you step away a minute, that is a very large sum of money for the Conservative Party to pledge, and it shows how they have shifted. And it also means that Sajid Javid has effectively ripped up what, for a while at least, or the former chancellor, government's fiscal rules been. And so they're no longer committed to reducing debt as a percentage of GDP. And instead there'll be a new fiscal rule where Sajid Javid will raise the borrowing threshold, bear with me, from 1.8% of GDP to 3%. And this will give the chance, in theory, more to spend on long-term projects such as road and rail. Ultimately, the overall picture is both main parties are pledging to spend a lot of money. It's still the case that Labour is spending quite a lot more. And I think that's why we're now going to get into, in the coming weeks of this campaign, the talk of who is the most competent. Mm. So one thing I keep hearing from Conservatives, both on the campaign, involved in the strategy, and also on MPs on that campaign trail, the words fiscally competent, fiscal competence. And I think there is a sense that, yes, we're spending money. We recognise that, you know, the years of austerity are over, but we are going to do it in a competent way, a way you can trust, whereas where you're allowed to Labour to do this, actually, would you actually think that they could? And I think one thing that gives the Tories some hope when you look at various polling on who would be the best Prime Minister and how parties stand is lots of people believe Labour want to help in terms of they do plan to fund the NHS by a very large sum and so forth. But when they're asked whether or not Labour can actually deliver all their plans, there is actually scepticism. So I think that's what you're going to try and see as the divide they're pushing.
Yes, James. So the Institute for Fiscal Studies has said that Labour's pledges are so high that it would be quite difficult physically to spend all that money. I mean, first of all, do you think that's true? And also secondly, do you think the Conservatives can spend their spending pledges, you know, in a good way as well?
So I think the IFS is essentially right on this. I don't see how there is the capacity in the construction sector, the infrastructure sector of this country, to spend the amounts of cash that Labour are talking about. And I think Katie's answer will have alarmed some cabinet ministers, because one of the things that they worry about is that they feel that they've lost too much of a dividing line. But and the 6 o'clock news last night was very much, you know, oh, both parties are going to borrow more to spend more. Labour going to do a bit more than the Tories. Labour going to do massive amounts of money. And I think there's a Tory worry that they haven't managed to draw a sharp enough dividing line on this point. I think to come back to it, I think they are right to change the fiscal rules about borrowing a bit more to spend on infrastructure. You can quibble about whether it should be 2.5% or 3%. But given the low interest rates there are and how cheap it is for government to borrow money, and the need to improve its country's physical and digital infrastructure, I think it's a perfectly prudent move. I think there is a problem in this country, which is we don't have a proper set of national accounts. We are very bad at distinguishing between what is day-to-day spending and what is capital spending. And part of the problem is that all politicians like to call all spending that they like investment, right? It's not. You know, we should be much more specific about the investment that will boost the productivity of a country. You know, I have no issue about the government borrowing money to, for example, get a 5G network built, because that is obviously going to make this country more productive in the medium to long term. So you're going to get that money back. But I think the Tories will need to draw a sharper dividing line on this point and actually ram home the point that, you know, that, as you said in your question, Cindy, it is almost impossible to spend the amount of money that Labour is spending. When Labour send out its press releases and they say Jeremy Corbyn will give a speech tomorrow and blah, 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 and then they list all the pledges. And that they are, I mean, you can see how it might work for them politically, because there's something to appeal for almost every group. But the sheer number of these pledges and how expensive they are is just quite jaw-dropping.
And Katie, speaking of expensive pledges, Labour today has also come out to say that they will bring about a workplace revolution for women, their words, not mine. First of all, tell us about this workplace revolution. And secondly, Katie, you're a woman. Do you welcome this?
Thanks for flagging that. And just in case listeners weren't aware, ultimately, this is a talking about more flexible working for everyone. But I think there's a specific focus on women here because Labour are saying they would extend statutory maternity pay from 9 to 12 months and also increase the time available for shared parental leave. And that's leading to this idea of it being women tailored. Ultimately, I think what's interesting about this is the Conservative Party historically actually has fared better with women in terms of the female vote. But in 2017, they fell behind. And actually, it was not the case anymore that, you know, they had an advantage amongst this group. You can see Labour trying to move in here and trying to keep up this lead, so to speak. With it work, I think that the current Conservative message, they're definitely aware that they need to find ways to reach out to more women. Mm. We don't yet know their specific plans. They plan anything on maternity pay. I suspect that they won't. But I definitely think the Tories want to have, you know, more female voices on the radio and more things like that to try and... There's lots of people who like to say this government is very laddie.
Yeah.
And to try and kind of break that down. As for the maternity pay, I think it almost comes down also to this idea, you know, a four-day working week. I presume there will be some parents to be who will like the idea of being able to take a full year off. Mm. But ultimately, things, I think flexibility tends to be the best thing, so having choices on it.
Thanks, Katie. Thanks, James. And for more chat on fiscal spending and how responsible it is, tomorrow we'll be hearing from Robert Colville, Director of the Centre for Policy Studies, on his take on the spending pledges from both sides. You might also have noticed that we've rebranded. We've got new podcast logos for pretty much all of our podcasts, and you can find everything else on Spectator Radio. So just go to your podcast provider and search Spectator Radio for the complete suite of Spectator podcasts. One particular podcast that might interest you guys, Coffee House Shots listeners, is our weekly podcast called The Edition, what was formerly known as The Spectator podcast. This week, Lara Prendergast speaks to Matthew Paris and Tanya Gold about their struggles with this election. Matthew Paris is a former Tory MP who's now left the Conservative Party and will be voting for Liberal Democrats. And Tanya Gold is a British Jew who cannot bring herself to vote for the Labour Party as she usually does. Do tune into that for a pretty thought-provoking discussion. That podcast is called The Edition, and you can search for it wherever you get your podcasts from.